1620. Welcome to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. Hope you are having a great day today, whether you're listening live Saturday afternoon right here on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620, or you are listening to the podcast version of the show, wherever you get your podcasts, whenever you want. We are going to hope to bring you up to speed on everything that's going on in entertainment and pop culture and make your day just a little bit better by doing so. Joining me to do so, as he does every week, is my co-host, Jeremy Branch. Jeremy, welcome.
We're back, baby, and I know this isn't our first week back, but I feel like it's our first week back where we've had a chance to catch up on some of the shows and movies that have been released over the last couple of weeks. We talked about Scream last week, so we were on top of that one. But yeah, we have a lot of exciting stuff to jump into today. I'm glad to be here.
Hopefully that'll be more exciting than Scream, because the more time I spend thinking about Scream 7, the more angry I get.
What a stinker of a movie that was.
Sometimes you like spend time with a movie and you gain a greater appreciation for it, even if you were kind of nonplussed about it at first, or nonplussed isn't the right word, but you were not impressed. And sometimes it just gets worse. And I think it's really just getting worse.
Was it a bad movie?
I mean, it's an entertaining, watchable movie while you're watching it. But when you spend more than 5 minutes thinking about any of the logic behind it, yeah, it kind of is a bad movie.
Is it better than any Halloween movie in the original timeline past Halloween?
Past the original Halloween or past Halloween 2018?
We're going to take 2018 off the board, but past
that's not
1978.
You're saying that's not the original timeline.
Yes. Even though it actually is.
I mean, it is if you take into account that, like, remember, we're going way on a tangent here, but that's fine. So you had the original timeline that started with Halloween 1 and 2, and then, of course, 3 was not part of that storyline, but then continues in 4 and 5.
Uh-huh.
Am I right? And uh-huh. Then they wrapped that one, and then they had the reboots.
H2O.
And then they had this, the ones that started with Halloween 2018 that basically said everything after Halloween 1 didn't take place. So it did not take into account Halloween 2, right?
Right. Because they weren't siblings in the 2018 one.
Right. Right. So in terms of the original timeline, I'll be honest, I haven't seen all of them, so it's hard for me to say. I mean, the original Halloween's a masterpiece.
It is. And Halloween 2 is at least directed by John Carpenter and not Kevin Williamson. But
yeah.
I don't know, man. I feel like even the worst Scream is stronger than most entries into most slasher franchises, which I unironically enjoy. So to your point, is it a good movie? I don't think so. Is it an unwatchable movie? I don't think so.
I think that the consistency record is still there in that 1 through 6. Yeah, I'll put them up against any other horror franchise out there. If you take those 6 movies and compare them to the first 6 movies in any other horror franchise, yeah, absolutely.
Facts. Well, I appreciate you taking this journey with me. What are we actually talking about?
But I gotta qualify that. But uh-huh. The 7th one dives off a cliff. And is the 7th one worse than some latter day entries in some other franchises? Hell yeah. It's worse than Nightmare on Elm Street 3. It's worse than a couple of the Nightmare on Elm Street movies, easily. Not just 3, but it's probably worse than New Nightmare. It's probably worse than...
Definitely.
I mean, it might be not as good as Freddy versus Jason. Maybe.
I love that movie.
I do too. I unironically love that movie. I mean, we're going to look at the Evil Dead franchise. Like, I think, even though that's a franchise that's had some like restarts and stuff like that, there's not a bad movie in that franchise either. And there's some that I like. There's some that I might like more than others. And granted, there aren't as many in that franchise as there are in Scream at this point. So maybe when we get to the seventh Evil Dead movie, we're going to have a problem.
Yeah.
But, you know, Evil Dead might now be the most consistently solid horror franchise. Because that's how badly this one drives Scream off the rails.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. There is a new Evil Dead coming out. I can't think of what it's called, but we won't have to wait long to see.
Evil Dead Burn, which will...
Evil Dead Burn, what a title.
Yeah, which will be the sixth movie, right? Because we had Evil Dead, Evil Dead 2, Army of Darkness, Evil Dead that was the kind of reboot.
2014, I think. Yeah.
And then we had... was it Evil Dead Rise? Is that what it was called?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and then now Evil Dead Burn. So, I'm waiting for, you know, Evil Dead back in training and Evil Dead Mission to Moscow and what other Police Academy movies were there?
I feel like they're just going with one word adjectives now. That's their new naming convention, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, and that's fine. That's fine. Yeah, I'm trying to think also, like, if we take this, and I know this is not where we intended to start out talking, but I'm on this now, so we're just going to suck it up and get through this segment on it because
yeah, it's not gonna hurt
because I'm having fun with it. But I'm trying to think about, like, other, like, not necessarily horror, but long-running franchises that may have varying levels of quality, and if any of them fall off at any point in them as badly as Scream 7 falls off for the Scream franchise. Like the Police Academy, Police Academy is what made me think of that. But
I think there are other franchises outside of it that are long running that have a lot of entries, like Mission Impossible.
Yeah,
I think a lot of people went wild on the last entry, but I thought it was great.
Yeah, Star Trek. Certainly there's what, 9 movies in the quote-unquote original universe, and then 3 in the universe, and there are a couple of clunkers in there, for sure.
Ooh, I might hurt your feelings when I say Rise of Skywalker fell off a cliff heavy.
I recognize that there are people. I do. It doesn't hurt my feelings. Everybody's entitled to their opinion. I don't think Star Wars has the consistency that Scream had through 6 movies. Because I recognize that we've, come into this new era where we're apologizing for the prequels and we think the prequels are great now. But but I'm not necessarily sure I'm wholly on board with that.
No. Nope.
So, I could make some arguments that episodes 2 and 3 have some significant weak points in them that are not as weak as, say, Scream 3 or Scream 4.
I love Scream 4.
Yeah, I think Scream 4 is great. I think, like I said, I'm, through 6, I'm solidly there. It's when we get So if you're going to make this the comparison, we're talking about we've gotten through the original trilogy, we've gotten through the prequel trilogy, and then Last Jedi falls off a cliff, which I don't think is fair to say. I don't think Last Jedi does fall off a cliff. Or not Last Jedi,
Force Awakens.
Force Awakens.
Yeah, you're
and
right.
It's, I think whatever else you think of Last Jedi and Rise of Skywalker, I think Force Awakens is a pretty solid movie.
Pretty undeniable. I agree.
And I mean, I'm just trying to like Trek maybe is a good comparison, but like Trek kind of stumbled a little bit out of the gate with the first one. And then 2
what is
7? I'm sorry?
What is 7? Like what would be the 7th?
7 is Generations.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so you have, Trek, kind of infamously, the knock on it was always the even-numbered ones are the good ones.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Which I don't agree, because Star Trek 3 is a really solid movie. But yeah, 1 is eh, and 5 is probably the low point of the entire franchise. But then 6 is really solid, and I have 3 of the Next Generation movies, which are still in that, progression of films. Uh-huh. I know there are people that are not very big on Nemesis and Insurrection, and I can see where there are criticisms of those too. But and then you got the 3 Kelvin movies, and I think all 3 of them are varying degrees of solid too. So I don't know. We've talked about this enough. We'll be back in a moment with more. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Bicycle, bicycle, bicycle. I want to ride my bicycle. Bicycle. Bicycle.
say white.
Say bite.
I say bite.
Say shark.
I say him, and Jaws was never my scene, and I don't like Star Wars.
Say Rose.
I say Roy.
Say God.
Give me a choice.
Say Lord.
I say Christ. I don't believe in Peter Pan, Frankenstein, or Superman.
All I wanna do is
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch, my co-host, with us on the line. And far be it from me to disagree with anything the great Freddie Mercury said.
Oh, yeah. Everything he said was solid.
But we do like Star Wars. And Jaws and, you know, Frankenstein and Superman and, you know, all those things are kind of really timely right now, actually. Well, maybe not Jaws, but the rest of it. And Freddie Mercury, like, has, in fairness, did say that that was a character and not that he didn't like Star Wars. And, you know, there are, of course, you know, images out there
Coward.
Of Freddie Mercury riding Darth Vader's shoulders on stage. So Freddie Mercury liked Star Wars just fine, too.
And to the Jaws point, let me get us on this totally different tangent. I was watching The Secret Agent, which is probably one of the nominees for the Oscars. Mm-hmm. And Jaws is heavily featured in it. Kind of interesting.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I'm planning to watch that this week before the Oscars, so I'm looking forward to that. But yeah, you know, we bring up Star Wars because we have very recently gotten a new piece of Star Wars.
Yeah.
In that we've gotten a trailer for the movie that's coming up pretty quickly now, The Mandalorian and Grogu. Which is coming out, do you know the release date off on that on the top of your head? It's like just a few weeks off, right?
I don't know the release date, but yes, I know it's coming real soon.
I'm actually very quickly looking, May 22nd. So yeah, we're just a little under 3 months away from it. So I think that's Memorial Weekend, if I remember correctly.
Mm-hmm.
So we finally got a full trailer. I know there was that little like thing that aired during the Super Bowl that people lost their minds about because they thought it was going to be a trailer and instead it was a parody of a Budweiser commercial.
Or a Budweiser commercial.
Yeah. Which I thought was fine. It was people need to stop getting upset about everything. You know, it just base it on what it was. It was a cute little nod to the history of Super Bowl commercials. It wasn't intended as a trailer. It was intended to keep the brand in the consciousness because they knew they had a trailer coming up pretty soon. And maybe they just should have said that at the end of it, trailer coming soon or something, and that would have settled the complaints. But man, it seemed like YouTube just went insane for about 2 weeks of, why did they do this? This is so stupid. And it's like,
yeah, you'd have to be really invested in Mandalorian and Grogu to get that upset about it. And I'm going to be honest, this trailer didn't do all that much for me.
You're talking about the Super Bowl thing or the actual trailer?
The actual trailer.
Okay, well, let's talk about that. So we do have an actual trailer. And I feel like the biggest criticism I've heard of the trailer has been, it looks like a TV show. Which,
yeah,
I mean, it kind of is, you know, we've had three seasons of this and the line between TV show and movie has been so blurred at this point in the budget and that the budgets that they've put into these TV shows are feature film budgets Go ahead.
You can't really hold that against it because like you said, if they weren't a TV show first and they put The Mandalorian on the big screen, we wouldn't have said this new trailer looks like a TV show. But it looks like a TV show because there's been three seasons of the TV show, and I think that's what dampens my enthusiasm. It's like more of the same instead of something new.
But there have been three seasons of a TV show that was made with the production values and budget of a feature film.
Right.
So
and
this
I agree
is
with you, but what I'm saying is, three seasons later, people's minds, their subconscious, have been trained to think. I mean, it is a TV show, so they're literally correct.
Yeah.
But it doesn't reflect the budget or the production value of the show.
Do you think it looks worse than the show?
No. I think it looks exactly like the show. Even they did put some big spectacle in the trailer. I think it looks like a movie, because if they would have put Mandalorian in the movie theater, nobody would have said that movie looks like a TV show. The only reason they're saying it looks like a TV show is because it is a TV show.
Right.
How do you
go bigger?
You can't. You can't. And I don't even think they should. I think that it is a critique that is intrinsic to what it is. And I'm not saying that's right or wrong. I'm just saying it doesn't look like a TV show because it's cheap. And it doesn't mean that the TV show looked cheap. It just means that people have fooled themselves into believing that when they're looking at the trailer, it does look like the TV show that they've been watching.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, that's fair, but like, if you've been watching and loving the show, then why would you not be excited about the movie?
For me, it's just strictly familiarity. It's like, if I've been being served filet mignon at my house for a week straight or whatever, and then they're like, hey, you can go out to this restaurant and get filet mignon, I'm going to be like, great, I love filet mignon, but also, like, I've been eating it at home for a week.
And you want a slice of pizza now. Do you think they're making a mistake by making this a theatrical film? Do you think it would have been better served as being season 4 of The Mandalorian?
That's a good question, and I guess the box office will ultimately tell. But with Filoni saying that it's kicking off a new era of Star Wars, I think that is a little underserving of what the franchise is. I feel like, yes, they could have kept it on Disney Plus and not made a big thing out of it, and nobody would have had a critique for it. But unfortunately, when you take what's essentially the finale of the TV show and you put it on in the theater and don't act like it's a fan event, it kind of just reduces the exclusivity of it.
Yeah, but, you know, you didn't have Martin Scorsese voicing a little, like, creepy alien carny vendor in the TV series.
That's valid. And it doesn't look bad to me. It's not bad. It's just like, man, I miss the days, and I know this is the old man screaming at the clouds. I miss the days when a new Star Wars felt like an event instead of just more.
Well, I feel like as long as we're in this era of content uber alles, that's not coming back.
Yeah,
because we're not going to go 10 years without a Star Wars thing ever again.
Mm-mm.
It's just not going to happen, just like we're not going to go 10 years without a Marvel thing, we're not going to go 10 years without a DC thing, we're not going to go 10 years without a Star Trek thing, you know, and insert big franchise here.
Yeah,
that ship has sailed now, you know. And I guess that's where you get like the requels and things like that, that people do get excited about because they haven't seen a property in forever. And, you know, I'll throw myself in that mix, because over the last week, there have been a series of videos with Nathan Fillion showing up on the doorstep of his former co-stars from Firefly and them doing this little "it's time" bit. And it's leading up to something. They're supposed to make an announcement next week of what it is. And it's been, you know, 25 years since Firefly debuted, and it's been, I think, darn close to 20 since the movie. So it's been a long time since we've seen that franchise, other than, you know, some, you know, like comic books and novelizations and things like that. So yeah, that excites me. The idea that we might get some more Firefly, I'm here for it.
Let me ask you this. Throughout the history of Star Wars, mm-hmm. I know you're of an age, you remember when the prequels came out. When the first entry into the prequels came out, when the first entry into the rebooted Abrams, or, you know, requel or whatever Abrams universe came out, And then now that it's been a couple of years since the last Star Wars movie, where on the excitometer are you for Mandalorian and Grogu?
Oh, nowhere near those levels. Because it's like you said, we kind of take Star Wars for granted now. Because we're going to...
You and I agree that it'll be quality. My enthusiasm isn't very high for it.
No, because we know there's always going to be another Star Wars project. Right now, we already know, okay, we've got the Darth Maul animated series that's coming. We've got the Sean Levy directed Starfighter movie that's coming out next year. You know, those are things we already know for sure, and we know there's other stuff in development.
Yeah.
That we're not going to ever go 5-10 years without a Star Wars project again.
Mm-mm.
It's just not going to happen. So it is impossible to have that kind of enthusiasm level for every single project when you're getting a new project every 6 months. And I'm not necessarily saying that's good or bad. I'm saying you're never going to see that kind of return again, that kind of excitement again. But that doesn't mean that I'm not excited or that there's not going to be good product.
Yeah.
And I hate to call it product, you know, but that's, let's be honest, that's how the studio's thinking about it, is product.
It is. And I mean, it always was. I think our understanding of the industry has changed quite a bit because obviously there was the big toys tie-in with the original trilogy. So like, it's not new to look at it through the lens of commerce. I just, as a fan, cannot muster up the same amount of enthusiasm, despite, agreeing it probably will be good.
Yeah, I mean, it's very much a, am I going to go see it on the, you know, the preview night? Yeah, of course I am.
Yeah.
But am I worried about there being lines around the building like there were, you know, for the prequels and the sequel trilogy at the outset, or even Rogue One? No. Like, I'm not worried about being able to get a seat or anything like that. I think those days might be gone, period, not just for Star Wars. I don't know. Remains to be seen. But, you know, I think that if anything has the possibility of getting that kind of level of enthusiasm in the next year or so, it's probably Avengers Doomsday.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
I don't know, man. I don't know, but I'm still excited about it. I still think the trailer looks good, and I'm looking forward to seeing it. We got to take a break. We'll be back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Change had much to say, but man, I still think them cats are crazy. They were asking if you were around, how you was, where you could be found. I told them you were living downtown, driving all the old men crazy.
Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz, and my co-host, Jeremy Branch, is on the line with us. And we're keeping it very classic rock today, which I'm kind of digging a little bit. But, you know, that may be the most obvious signpost of the next thing that we're going to talk about on this show, and that is we have a new trailer for the final season of The Boys, speaking of TV shows that look like movies, coming up on Amazon Prime. We just had this trailer drop just a couple of days ago, and we're going to get into it a little bit here, Jeremy. What did you think of the trailer?
Oh, it's fantastic. You sent it to me yesterday, and when I sat down and checked it out, I was completely reminded about how much I love this show. I think it's a great time to wrap things up because it has gotten a little long in the tooth as far as what it can do before it resolves. But if you've listened to Let's Go Pensacola for any amount of time, you know, both Julio and myself are big fans of the show, and I put Homelander up there on the Mount Rushmore of greatest villains on a television series.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, we're getting to this point of, you know, certainly if you're looking about the dramatic arc of the series, where the odds look insurmountable.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's how do our good guys, for lack of a better term, come out over everything that Homelander and the people that are on his side have put against him?
And interestingly, how do our good guys stay good, which is something that we started exploring with Butcher at the end of the previous season. And it looks like we're going to see that kind of play out to its conclusion.
Well, that's one of the things
I... motivations in this are to, like, kill all the suits.
Yeah, that's one of the things I love about this series is that there are very few people that are just good.
Yeah.
You know, there are shades of gray to everybody here. Butcher is not a good guy.
Uh-uh.
Butcher is, you know, at the best an anti-hero, and at the worst, he's a villain himself. You know,
Yeah.
I would argue that maybe Huey and Starlight are the closest to pure good.
Mother's Milk definitely seems to be, because I was thinking the same thing as we were kind of playing through the characters. And I feel like Mother's Milk definitely has had some minor transgressions, but mostly seems to be a pretty altruistic guy.
Yeah. So anything that you were particularly... I'll tell you one thing that I vibed about a little bit in this trailer. Like, it definitely does feel like we're coming to a conclusion. And, like, even if we didn't know that this was the final season of The Boys, it would feel like we're coming to a conclusion. And that's true to the extent that I kind of wonder where the universe goes from here. Like,
so like those people that aren't keeping up with Gen V, you know, our protagonist, our lead of that series has found a way over into The Boys. And that kind of, I think, ties into your concern, or not even concern, but question as to how we move forward after this.
Yeah. Is there anything that makes sense to go forward with a season 3 of Gen V after this?
I mean, if this comes to a conclusive and satisfying ending, I don't see how it could.
I mean, I know there are other projects that are planned. I know there is a prequel series that is planned.
You can do that.
Yeah, there's a series we already know about. It's called Vought Rising, that is going to focus on Soldier Boy and Stormfront. And it is a prequel series. So we're going to see Jensen Ackles return as Soldier Boy in this prequel series. We're going to see some other characters that we're going to see during the course of this season that are going to be part of that prequel. But it will take place before all of the events of the entire series of The Boys. So it's going to be kind of like the early days of Vought. And that's fine, but like, I like the Gen V characters. I would not mind seeing them continue if it makes sense for them to continue. I'm not seeing a way that it makes sense for them to continue.
As long as they give us a satisfying ending, and I know I'm harping on it, as long as they give us a satisfying ending, there really is no way for Gen V to move forward. I hate the idea of wrapping up The Boys neatly, but then it being inconsequential and allowing this series to continue.
Well, I mean, I think that if this series is going to end satisfactorily, it has to end with the defeat of Homelander. Or, you know, it ends with, you know, rocks fall, everybody dies in some way. Or it could end with, you know, Homelander wins and we have this totalitarian society. In which case, then there is room to go on.
God, that would kind of rip.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they could go that route. They have not strictly followed the comics. And there's stuff that happened in the summation of the comics that we already know is not the direction that they're going in. You know, they, you know, in the comics, it was revealed that, and I'm going to give you spoilers for the comics here, that Black Noir had actually been a clone of Homelander all along. And that was there to, you know, take Homelander out if Homelander ever got out of control, but had become even worse than Homelander. That is clearly not the route they've gone in the series. you know, without spoiling anything, you know, we've already seen a black noir die and be replaced with another black noir. We know what this guy looks like under the mask, and he doesn't look like Homelander.
So I might be looking at things through too narrow of a lens, though. Even as you just now said, what if Homelander wins? There are a lot of ways that it could resolve itself, in which it doesn't spell the end of all soups, or that there's no more threats afterwards. I just want to it to feel like the end of Endgame, and then if that's what it feels like, then everything afterwards just feels a little less awesome to me.
Well, let's move on. I also wanted to talk about another trailer that we got this week for an upcoming new series on HBO Max, for as long as it's called that before it becomes Paramount Plus Max HBO minus to the power of X to the third Skydance or whatever the hell we're... Spyglass, whatever the names of the damn companies are.
I think we can both agree that it's about time for a rebrand. I mean, HBO Max has been that for, what, about 4 weeks now?
Yeah, so, that would be consistent with the branding or lack thereof. But at any rate, we've gotten the first trailer for Lanterns, which is the upcoming Green Lantern-based series from James Gunn's DC Universe. And interesting vibe on this. We've been told all along that it was going to be like a buddy cop thing in the mode of True Detective. And that's really what this trailer feels like. Like, it barely feels
so
like a superhero project.
You're a huge fan of Lanterns, and you kind of said the tone's maybe not what you'd expect. How did it land for you?
I think it looks like a really great show. I'm not sure it looks like a really great Green Lantern show. Like, I'm a little, there's some things about it I'm a little dubious. I think Kyle Chandler makes a great Hal Jordan. I'm a little bit worried about them possibly putting Hal Jordan out to pasture, which would bother me. I think Aaron St. Pierre? Is that his name?
Aaron Pierre,
Yeah. I think that he looks like a very fine Jon Stewart, especially as starting out Jon Stewart. Like Jon Stewart a lot. I'm here for multiple Green Lanterns. We know we've got Guy Gardner in this universe. I'm a little bit iffy on the scene of Hal Jordan being borderline xenophobic towards other Green Lanterns.
Yeah, you mentioned that to me.
But, you know, there's not enough here for me to overly judge it. I there's a lot of stuff I liked about it. I like the characterizations. I like that there's a mystery here. I like the little bit of effects that we saw. I'm open-minded, but I'm... This is a property that's very close to my heart. So,
and as somebody that kind of sits on the opposite end of that, I feel like it feels like two shows battling with each other. The one that they're putting in front of everyone, and then the one that they're seemingly hiding from everyone, which is the more fantastical world that the Green Lantern actually occupies.
Well, and maybe that's exactly what's happening here, in which case I would be pretty happy. Like, I'm kind of...
Right.
I like that kind of thing in movies too. Like, I have been on record more than once that, like, I wish I could walk into a movie like From Dusk Till Dawn, not knowing about the big twist in the middle.
Right.
Like, where the movie turns on a dime and becomes, you know, changes from a gangster movie into a vampire movie.
Yeah.
And there's been a couple other things like that relatively recently. Like, when that's executed well, I'm here for it all day. And if you can keep that a secret and not put that in the marketing, even more so. But you really can't with when it's the selling point. And it's kind of the selling point with this. We see enough fantastical stuff in here that we know fantastical is going to happen.
Yes.
So I don't know. I'm a little dubious, but I'm still excited. And I think that with the merger that's going on right now that we alluded to, there's a lot weighing on this, like more than was weighing on it already.
Like, is Hal Jordan your favorite Green Lantern, or is it Jon Stewart?
Not just my favorite Green Lantern, but my favorite comics character of all time.
All right.
So
he's a little more curmudgeon-y than I expected him to be.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. There is a lot weighing on not just this, but also on Supergirl and Clayface and Man of Tomorrow in this pending series for James Gunn to continue to be able to execute his vision, which I desperately want to see. So I hope it succeeds. We're going to take a break. You're back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Oh, boy.
You said your phone was broken, just forgot to charge it. Whole outfit you're wearing, God, I hope it's ironic. Did you just say your phone?
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. Got your co-host, Jeremy Branch, on the line. And, man, I just had to jump to a quick fade on that.
Forgot, did it get explicit?
Forgot that Sabrina uses some adult language in that song.
Just a little racy.
Because in fairness, the reason I'm playing that and the reason I forgot about that is because most recent time I've heard that song was Sabrina performing it in the Muppet Show, which recently, I don't know how the best way to say this is, they created one episode of a revived Muppet Show as like a pilot/test. And they have not, they have not greenlit a series yet, but the idea was if this takes off, they're going to build a, you know, build a new Muppet Show series. And, you know, basically just reviving the old classic Muppet Show that we all grew up with in the 70s and 80s. The same conceit of them putting on a variety show and the same theater and, you know, basically building what we had before. And Sabrina Carpenter is the guest in this episode. And she does sing that song, but of course she uses the clean lyrics, and I managed to grab the version that did not have the clean lyrics. So sorry about that, FCC. I think I faded out before she got to the exciting word in the song. But anyway, Jeremy and I both had a chance to watch this. It's been out for a few weeks now, but you know, with Pensacon and everything, we just caught up with it. And I really liked it. I think, first of all, great talent showcase for Sabrina Carpenter that really shows you what she's capable of, because you listen to these records and, you know, there's a lot of production on them and you never really know what the voices and everything is. When you have that person singing against a Muppet, and yeah, they're doing that in a studio too, but it really does kind of showcase the talent, and not just that, like the acting talent that she has too. I thought it was a great showcase for her, but moreover, I thought it was a return to form, like the Muppets. This was great.
Yeah, I'm with you. When you said they're going to kind of check the temp to see if it's something that people are interested in, I guess the jury is still out on that. But as far as creatively, I think it was a massive success. It really recaptured, I think, what so many of us love about the Muppets. And there's a couple of things that I love in particular. First of all, Sabrina Carpenter. She was the perfect guest for the first episode. To your point, she's super talented. I also love that they played up her similarities or her how much she was a fan of Miss Piggy and how their outfits tend to match throughout the show.
Oh yeah, that was great. That was such a great running joke, and just like it was really a tribute to the Muppets. And that she just had so much fun with it. But you could also kind of see that maybe she was sincere about that to some extent.
It does seem like it, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you think about Sabrina Carpenter's persona, it does kind of feel a little bit Miss Piggy. Like in a good way.
Yeah.
You know,
I totally agree.
And I think that it's best reflected. The Muppet Show is a variety show. So you have all these acts that go on and they all do different things. And she goes on to sing what starts as a duet with Kermit on Islands in the Stream. And at some point, you know, Miss Piggy gets jealous and she knocks Kermit out of the boat and takes his place. And it turns into a duet between Sabrina and Miss Piggy. And where they change the lyric to "from one diva to another."
Uh-huh.
Like, I thought that really worked.
Yeah.
Like, that was just the spirit of, like, both the spirit of Sabrina Carpenter's public image and the spirit of the character of Miss Piggy.
So I am a little younger than the Muppet Show. I have gone back and watched episodes, but I love the narrative framing device. It kind of reminded me of Saturday Night, which came out last year, in which they kind of show the behind the scenes of launching the first episode of Saturday Night Live.
Right.
This parallels that because they're doing a relaunch of the Muppets show and Kermit's kind of trying to produce and put this thing together. Is that from the show or is that kind of just the way that they decided to hinge this one?
Well, I mean, the Muppet show from the beginning had backstage as part of it.
Oh, cool.
So
that's a lot of fun.
It's funny you should say that because I never thought about this before. But, you know, of course, Jim Henson and the Muppets were part of SNL at the start. And right. in fact, Jim Henson is portrayed in the movie you mentioned. And after he left SNL, and it was never a great fit for the Muppets to be part of SNL, but they were, he went and created the Muppet Show. And now I'm wondering if the backstage of the Muppet Show was based on his experiences backstage at SNL.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, it kind of is a parody of SNL in that way.
Well, and there was that bit, too, that where, you know, you see the walking through the hallway and the pictures of all the past stuff on the walls. Dude, I have not been in Studio 8H where SNL is taped, but I have been in Studio 8G, which is where Seth Meyers' show is taped, and they're basically literally adjacent to each other. That's a direct duplicate of the hallway that leads to those studios.
Oh, look at that. That's awesome.
Yeah, there are lining that wall that leads to those two studios. There are all these black and white photos of the history of the show. So that felt very much like an on the nose, like nod to SNL there. Like that hit. So, I mean, you'd only know that if you'd had a chance to actually, you know, either go to a live broadcast of SNL or, you know, one of the other shows that tapes in that adjacent area. Which, you know, had I not gotten to go see a Seth Meyers taping earlier this year or late last year, I wouldn't have known that. But as soon as I saw that, I was like, oh, they're like full on nodding to SNL there. Yeah. Yeah. It's like that's very much an if you know, you know kind of thing. But if you know, it hits.
Yeah. I had a lot of fun with it. I hope they do continue to make new episodes of it.
I hope it gets the audience because from a creative standpoint, I don't see how they don't. I thought the only place it missed, and I think they can work on this and fix it, is I don't feel like they got Kermit's voice down.
Yeah, it was serviceable to me. I could definitely tell that it wasn't the original voice, but I wasn't too hung up on it.
Yeah, but other than that, like everything from start to finish was just spot on, and I really liked it. Like. Even the random thing of the rat singing Blinding Lights.
That was my favorite part.
I thought that was really fun. I thought the comedy sketches were really good. Loved it. So we got that great piece of classic television back in the last few weeks. And we got another great piece of classic television back. We have new episodes of Scrubs, which debuted last week with two new episodes. We've seen a third new episode this week that just dropped a couple of days ago. And, this feels like they barely missed a step to me. I'm a massive Scrubs fan, and I'm very happy with this.
When you told me that they were relaunching the series and that you had watched the first two episodes, I think I forgot. But I wasn't overly enthusiastic until I watched the first episode and realized how much I missed those characters, that style of Bill Lawrence television, and... You know, he's since gone on to do some really great stuff over at Apple, but I do think this is kind of his, you know, defining show that kind of established that style. And to your point, it does feel like they didn't miss a step. I think it does the comedy really good and that kind of trademark emotional payoff at the end that you get of every episode is still really, really effective.
Yeah, well, this is the show that made all the other stuff that followed possible. You know, Ted Lasso and Shrinking and all that, none of that exists without Scrubs.
Right.
Yeah. You know,
and
so,
they kind of, borrowed the formula.
Yeah. I really loved it. I really loved getting these characters back. There was a moment in the first episode where we see John C. McGinley's character, Dr. Cox, not John C. McGinley. Yeah, John C. McGinley. That's right. When I start to say the name, I start getting them mixed up with John C. Reilly. They're nothing alike.
I thought the same thing.
But John C. McGinley, just a great, great character, Dr. Cox. And there's always been this relationship between him and JD, where JD desperately wanted him to be a mentor, and he was his mentor, and he knew he was his mentor, but he was always kept him at arm's length. And this scene where he tells JD, I need you to be for them, meaning the new interns, what I was for you. I can't do this. They need you.
Yeah.
Dude, I had tears in my eyes.
JD immediately took to work too. And just, I can't wait to see the way that he kind of fills that position while both being true to who JD is, but also taking the lessons that Dr. Cox taught him. And you can see the way that their leadership is so different. But like you said, obviously, Dr. Cox informed so much of like who he became as a doctor.
Yeah. Now, that being said, there's one thing that I don't love.
Oh, God.
But I understand why they're doing it. And I think I know what the end game with it is.
The divorce.
It's the divorce. I don't love that JD and Elliot got divorced. But I think that if you know the history of the characters, it does make sense. And because they've always been on and off. And I think that the goal here is that over the course of the series that they're going to come back together.
I could see that, but I also think Bill Lawrence does a good job about making even dysfunctional relationships or strained relationships still meaningful and impactful, even if they're not traditional, you know?
Well, and without spoiling anything in the third episode for you, there's already steps being taken in that direction.
Okay.
In the direction that you're talking about. So we'll see what happens, but I'm loving having this show back. We've got to go, but we will be back next week with Oscar predictions. Until then, you're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.